We hop on board the telephone line and welcome in our friend Steve Buckley from The Athletic. Buck, good afternoon to you.
And good afternoon to you, too. I'm back in my nice, cool office after a morning watching the Patriots practice in like 500-degree weather down in Foxborough, so I'm glad to be indoors for a while.
Well, I don't blame you. Well, we'll talk about the Patriots in a little bit. First, I'd like to talk a little baseball. You had a terrific piece on David Ortiz and his induction to the Baseball Hall of Fame. It was certainly a great moment, and as you said, he did as he often did at the plate. He came through in the clutch and showed a little bit of depth. Ortiz could sometimes be larger than life in many ways, but there is some depth to that man.
Well, I mean, he's got a demonstrative personality. We know it. He certainly knows it, and he's banking it now because he's endorsing just about everything. And it's not fake. It's not contrived. We've all run across athletes over the years who could turn on the charm when there was a camera going, but could be otherwise a little hostile. But he's a pretty amiable guy. On the Hall of Fame stage, it calls for something a little different, and it might not have struck a good note if he just did the David Ortiz bit, not that it's fake or anything, for 15 or 20 minutes. And instead, we got a very calm, reflective Ortiz who had people to thank and a few stories to tell and so forth. And there was some humor mixed in there, and that was enough to keep it rocking. But as I wrote in the piece, the humor was more segue than anything else. He would roll out a few stories and thank some people. Then there'd be a little joke, and we'd have a little interlude. We'd laugh, and then he'd bring it back to his prepared remarks. It was very well done.
What does he mean in the history of the Red Sox franchise?
Okay, so it's all a matter of what words you choose to use. And I had a big fight with Mark Bertrand, the radio guy down here in Boston. Talk show host. We were on TV one night, and he called him the best player in Red Sox history. Well, he's not, and we need to rid ourselves of that notion. The best player in Red Sox history is Ted Williams. He had the highest on-base percentage in the entire history of baseball. The last player hit 406, and we can just go on and on about Teddy Ballgame. However, David Ortiz is clearly the most impactful player in Red Sox history, and dare I say it, the most important player in Red Sox history. Because they hadn't won a World Series for 80-some-odd years before he came along. And then under during his time with the franchise, they won three of them, the most important being 2004. He had a litany of dramatic postseason hits over the years. And it changed the way people look at the Red Sox. So certainly for an entire generation of Red Sox fans, anyone in their 20s and early 30s, needn't be burdened with 1918 and all that nonsense, because that's what David Ortiz brought to the team.
I agree completely with that assessment. Now, this year's current edition, struggling to say the least, 50-50 through 100 games, 3.5 out of a playoff spot in this expanded playoff world. Are they buyers still come Tuesday?
I suspect they're sellers to a degree. They're bullpen parts they can sell off for some prospects. I wouldn't keep any warm meals waiting for, say, J.D. Martinez, Nathan Eovaldi, and a few others, but I'd be very surprised if at this point they traded a Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts. I may be wrong. I mean, they traded Mookie Betts, so trading franchise players is not something new to this current baseball administration, so anything could happen. But, you know, here's the thing. It's an expanded playoff format. It invites scrappy underdogs to get in there and make some noise. But to me, the Red Sox are not the team that's a year or two away and they're playing 500 baseball and they might sneak in there and catch lightning in a bottle, if you will. They just make too many mistakes, and they're not, frankly, a very good ball club right now. Part of it's injuries, but part of it's roster assembly. It's just not a good team to look at and to think long-term with this addition.
We're talking with Steve Buckley here on Downtown. To the Patriots, you had a terrific piece on Malcolm Butler, who is back and happy to be back in his football home.
Well, he made the biggest play in Super Bowl history. I even looked up some of the top 10, top 20 lists and so forth, and some of them had the Butler interception off Russell Wilson, number one. Some of them had two, some of them had three. I mean, I was there, and I tell you, and I think I mentioned this in the column, actually had a little note that I put to a reader's comment at the end. In all the years I've been covering sports, I have never, ever, ever seen a press box so loud after that interception. There's an old thing that everybody knows, no cheering in the press box, but it wasn't cheering. It was like 5 minutes, and it's an expanded press box. It goes almost end zone to end zone. And as it happened, my seat was literally looking right over that corner of the end zone where we made the interception, on this side, if you will. And it was a collective, oh, my God, from everybody in the press box. And it wasn't cheering, but it was like all these hardened veteran sports writers who were paid good money and bad money and lots of money, depending on their job, all lost it at that moment because it was so entirely unexpected. And it, from a New England standpoint, it's one of the most memorable plays in the entire history of New England sports. You know, we can, you know, fists home run and all this. But, boy, just in terms of shot value, it's something nobody who followed the team that you will ever forget.
And like some others that we saw with Patrick Chung and other players along the way, when guys get that second chance to come back to New England, they seem to have even more appreciation for that opportunity.
I think he does. I don't know what his role will be with the team. You know, he's older and he's lower in the depth chart, and he'll be a contributor, hopefully, because he's certainly an amiable guy, and you'd like to see him. You know, you always root for guys like that who are trying to right their ship, as it were. But he certainly appreciates it. He called Boston home, New England home, and he made a big play of saying how much he loves it here. And for those of you listeners who don't know, he left after being benched in the Philadelphia Super Bowl that they lost, and then went on to Tennessee. He tried it with the Cardinals last year, ended up not being with the team, and retired. Of course, we all take retirements in sports these days with a grain of salt, witness Tom Brady. And now he's back. So it's an interesting story to follow. But from where I was yesterday just talking to him, I'm saying to myself, this is the guy standing X number of feet away from the media mob who contributed a play that we will never forget. And he's like right here in a different role. And I thought that was fascinating.
Mac Jones, everybody's talking about the weight loss. He looks stronger, healthier. And you wrote about the fact that he's got a little of that number one quarterback swagger that you want to see.
He does, and I was very surprised by it. But maybe I wasn't paying attention last year. But then again, if you go back to 2 years ago, it was Cam Newton during the pandemic season. And that was kind of a blink and you missed it kind of a season for the Patriots. You know, nobody was there and, you know, and so forth. And then last year they have, I didn't write this, but to me, upon reflection, it was not unlike years ago when Jimmy Williams and the Red Sox announced there would be a quote-unquote competition for shortstop between John Valentin and Nomar Garciaparra, and that's the way they played it. Everybody down there knew it was going to be Nomar and that Valentin would have to shift to third or second, and he wasn't happy about it because he knew it was a sham tryout. And I think that's kind of what was happening last year, and that I think that their plan all along was to have the rookie be the quarterback. But for whatever their reasons were, maybe not wanting to put too much pressure on the kid, I think they played it as a competition. And then, you know, with not a whole lot of fanfare, they just simply said, okay, he's our quarterback. And off went Cam Newton. And they had an okay season. They made the playoffs. They couldn't do much against Buffalo. But in terms of building block, and I'm just speaking quarterback here, not the entire team, it was definitely a big move forward for them, because if you look at all these teams that have had great quarterbacks, and, you know, obviously there are exceptions, but a lot of times when you lose your iconic Hall of Fame-bound quarterback, there's a big dip there for a while, but who knows what will happen this season, but they do have a quarterback.
Now, Coach Belichick seemed quite excited about the signing of Devon Godshaw. I feel that that's a nice addition, but they still seem a few pieces short of championship caliber.
Yeah, I don't know what a lot of people who follow the Patriots a lot closer than I do are trying to break down Belichick's comments and determine what his end game is with this warm and fuzzy, you know, it's accolade a day these days. a couple of days ago, he took the the shiny spotlight and put it on Mac Jones. And then it was this guy. Tomorrow it'll be somebody. Belichick wasn't available today. I don't think he speaks again until Monday. But we'll all be waiting anxiously to see who he lavishes praise upon.
Buck, a big night coming up, August 22nd, 7 p.m. The old-time baseball game is back, and a great event as always. And this year, you get a chance to honor the memory of a local guy who made good.
Jim Corsi was a very good friend of mine. We did TV together and radio, and he was the first former Red Sox player to participate in our game back in 02 and 03. And that helped us along greatly. He died in January, and we are doing the game on August 22nd as a fundraiser for the Jimmy Fund, because that's what Jim Corsi's family wanted. And Hall of Fame pitcher Dennis Eckersley will be at the game that night to say he's not going to pitch, so don't drive down from Beezy. And he is going to say a few words, and he will catch a first pitch from Jim Corsi's son, Joey Corsi, who's 15. Now he just turned 16. He's going to play in the game. And before we run out of time, if anyone wants to donate to Jimmy Fund, through our game, there's a link. You just go to oldtimebaseball.com. That's old time, all one word, oldtimebaseball.com. And there's a link there to the Jimmy Fund, and we would love to have some contributions. And your donations go directly to the Jimmy Fund, so that's the cool thing about it. So
that's terrific. Well, we wish you good luck with that, as always. Thanks for making some time for us this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Buck. Steve Buckley of The Athletic here on Downtown. And again, the link, oldtimebaseball.com, and you can donate to help out the cause.